Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks and John Schmoke. For a second there, you know what's so funny is that, like, this to me is the driving chair. Like, your chair is the driving chair. So if I'm in this chair, I'm just automatically assuming, like, I'm along for the ride. Like, where are you going to take us, John?
So why don't you just imagine that we're doing this show in London, you can be in the driver's chair.
That's right. So I apologize. Again, we welcome you in. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Anita Marks, John Schmoke, of course, and you, Big Blue Nation. Hopefully you're getting really excited because we're getting closer and closer and closer to training camp, and I'm definitely excited. I walked into the building about 20 minutes ago, and it's just like a lot of new faces, a lot of fresh faces, people having meetings. I saw a few of the players in the lunchroom. I like to call it the mess hall. So you're getting the feeling that the organization is getting ready, is getting geared up for training camp. So it's really an exciting time.
Players arrive in 10 days officially for camp, and the first practice in 11 days. So we're getting there. It's finally going to be here. Paul Dottino is very excited, as you might imagine.
That's an understatement.
It's the best time of year for him.
I think people like know that already. I don't think that that's, you know, we're telling them anything new.
By the way, how frightening is it, by the way, that Paul's been at the beach for a week? Can you imagine how tan that man is when he gets back?
No, it is
going to be scary.
I think it's
going to
be quite frightening. I had this weekend off because the station that I work at during the weekends was broadcasting the British Open. So I had the weekend off. I went down to the shore. I know you were off for a week.
Yeah.
This is my first chance seeing you since you've been back. Where'd you go? Did you have fun?
Yeah, I did take a long trip. Did a couple day trips. Went back to Brooklyn, hung out with some of my friends growing up a little bit. Did a great adventure trip. Hung out, hit the driving range a few times. That was fun. It was a good week. Come back, relax, ready to go. Let's rock and roll.
Let's do it. So we do have a few things going on today. Pretty excited. Good friend of mine. I've known him for quite a while. He has his finger on the pulse of the Miami Dolphins like no other. His name is Omar Kelly. He works for the Sun Sentinel. As a lot of Giants fans know, because last week Lance and I got very close since we did all four shows together. In each day, we're breaking down that Giants opponent that the Giants are going to face in 2015. So today is the Miami Dolphins and my hometown. So really excited to have Omar Kelly on. Talk about the Miami Dolphins. They've made a lot of improvements in the offseason. I think this is going to be a really big year for their starting quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. He got his new deal. He's got his contract. He has to live up to those dollar signs. They've added some more talent around him. So really excited to talk to Omar. And we also have a show question of our own. John, I'll let you throw it out.
Yeah, and I think a good thing to talk about, and a lot of people have talked about a lot of the periphery issues with Eli off the field and things like that. But do you think that this statistically will be Eli Manning's best season? And I think if you go back and you look at Eli's career, there are really two other seasons that you would probably consider Eli's best. I think the number one year, you have to go back to 2011 when he threw for nearly 5,000 yards, 4,900 yards. He had 15 interceptions that year, but he also threw 29 touchdown passes. One of the best fourth quarter quarterback years in NFL history. He had one of the highest quarterback ratings of his career, 92.9. And then last year, I think, was one of Eli's best years because he threw only 14 interceptions, had 30 touchdowns. So if you want to look at his two best years, those are probably it. Go back to 2009, he was good in that year as well. And I'm going to answer yes here, Anita. I think Eli is going to have the best year of his career, only because I believe this offense is going to be pretty balanced. I think they'll run the football. I think they'll keep defenses honest. But I think Eli will still have plenty of opportunities. Victor Cruz, I think, will maybe not be his old self right away, but I think he'll still be a very, very good wide receiver. Odell Beckham is what Odell Beckham is. Reuben Randle's probably one of the best third wide receivers in the league. And I think with the way this offensive system works, is the offensive line going to be dominant and give Eli 8 seconds back there to, you know, survey the field for a year and a day and find people? No, I don't think he's going to have that. But based on how the system works with the rhythm passing, the three-step drops, the five-step drops, I think Eli will have plenty of time to do what he needs to do to throw touchdowns this year, to throw for 4,500 yards, to have a better than 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. I think this is going to be Eli Manning's best year.
And we are opening up the phone lines, 201-939-4513. If you want to get in, we're curious. I know, and I think one of the negatives we're going to hear from folks are about that offensive line. Mm-hmm. But still, we still want to hear from you. We still want to hear your opinion. Is this going to be Eli Manning's best year statistically? Of all the years that he's had here with the New York Football Giants, 201-939-4513. Also, you can hit us up on Twitter. Make sure you follow the Giants. You should be following them already, and that's at Giants. And any comments, please include that hashtag Giants Chat, and John and myself will be monitoring Twitter throughout
yes.
the show.
Well, what do you think about Eli's this year?
I'm with you. I'm with you, and I'm with you for a number of reasons. And I'll kick it off with the offensive line. Number one, I don't think the offensive line is as bad as what most people think. And a big reason for that is, obviously, I like the left side of the line. I think Eric Flowers is really going to impress some folks. I you know what you get with Pugh. I think Richburg is going to be really solid. We really didn't even get a good taste of what Jeff Schwartz can bring to the program
yep.
because he got injured, didn't play the majority of the year. I think folks are going to be really pleasantly surprised with him. And, you know, Marshall Newhouse, my gut's telling me, John, he's not starting at right tackle. I don't think the right tackle is not on this roster yet. Or I think Jeff Schwartz moves to right tackle, and they bring in a guard.
I think there's a better chance Schwartz moves to right tackle.
I do.
Pugh moves to right tackle.
Okay, either or Pugh or Schwartz. This is why I don't think it's Pugh. I don't think it's Pugh because I think the Giants want to start building that relationship in that rapport with Pugh and Flowers.
And you think since long term that's a spot you want to get in there now and build?
I know.
I'm with you on that.
I know I'm going to date myself here, but I got into the league and I started covering the Dolphins with Rich.
Richmond Webb.
Richmond Webb,
yeah,
and
right.
Keith Sims.
Okay.
And they were a wall for Dan Marino. I mean, and they were a team. They were like brothers. So I know how important it is to have that 1-2 punch as a wall on that offensive line. So, I mean, obviously, yeah, Pugh would be the great option there. But I think they want to develop that rapport and that relationship and solidify that side of the line. Just my opinion. I don't think either the right tackle is not on this roster yet, or they're going to move Jeff Schwartz over. That's my take. But going back to Eli Manning, I think this offensive line is going to be better than what most people think, number one. Number two, obviously, a second year under this system. No disrespect to Kevin Gilbride, because you know how much I adore Kevin Gilbride.
He's
just a really phenomenal man, and I think he did great things. Obviously, he helped this franchise win Super Bowls. But I think this system suits Eli Manning. I can't believe I'm saying this, because when McAdoo came over, I did not feel this way. I just said, how is Eli Manning is, and with all due respect to Eli Manning, not as athletic as Aaron Rodgers. How is Eli Manning going to fit in the system, carry the system out, play in the system? Obviously, they tweaked it, fine-tuned it for Eli Manning's abilities. But I think this system is going to suit him. I think we're looking at him close to another 70% completion percentage heading into the season. Obviously, he's got one of the best wide receivers in Odell Beckham Jr. We're all hopeful that Victor Cruz is going to come back and be healthy. I think that this is really a big year for Reuben Randall. I think Randall needs to step up. I love the way that Shane Vereen is going to be utilized out of the backfield in the passing game. And I'm excited. I'm really excited, John, about the competition at the tight end position. And I'm not sitting here saying it's Larry Donnell's job to lose, but I think that they've brought some talent in here that is going to challenge him and compete with him to make that position better.
I agree with that.
So I think that with the plethora of weapons, if everybody can stay healthy, I think this offensive line is going to surprise people. I do believe that this very well could be Eli Manning's best year as a quarterback for the Giants.
What?
Doesn't mean that I'm saying he's going to go out and win a Super Bowl for everybody.
Right.
We're talking statistically. Yes, I do believe that.
I look at the weapons. I could argue that if Cruz, and I think Cruz is going to be great, I could argue that Cruz, Beckham, Randall is even better than the Knicks Cruz Manningham combination back in 2011. If it's not better, it's at least at the same level. it's right there.
Yeah.
If not equally good.
I mean, because look, listen, Hakeem Nicks was not 100% healthy at that point in time. He was dealing with a lot of stuff.
So, I mean, you have just as many weapons. The running game is going to be there. You mentioned Larry Donnell. He's a very good receiving tight end. And you mentioned being in the system as set the second year. And I think Eli was great in Gilbride's system, and he can be great in any system. But as he got used to this system last year, his final six games, and I did very quick math here, so my math's not going to be exact. He threw, and for his last six games last year, he threw for almost 1,900 yards. That's more than 300 yards per game, 12 touchdowns, so two touchdowns a game, and only three interceptions, one interception every two games. So you do that over the course of a 16-game season, you're looking at 30 touchdowns, you know, nine interceptions, eight interceptions maybe, and about 5,000 yards. And if he does that, that's going to be Eli Manning's best season. And if you take a look at the schedule, Anita, you know, there aren't a ton of terrific defensive teams on this schedule. I mean, you do have to play a couple teams in the AFC East that are very good, like the Bills, like the Dolphins, like the Jets. And I think that's where the toughest defenses are going to come.
Absolutely.
And the Panthers are, and the Vikings are pretty good defensively, too. But the three teams in the NFC East, you could argue that the defense for any one of those three teams isn't their strength. So you can score a lot of points against them. The Saints have revamped their defense. Who knows how good they're going to be on that side of the ball. Tampa struggled defensively last year. And Atlanta is going to struggle on defense this year. So you have a lot of games on the schedule this year. And again, it's the NFL. You don't know what team's going to be in the year. I get that. But you don't have a lot of teams, besides the few that I mentioned, that are defensive teams. You know, the Niners aren't the defense they used to be. They've lost half their starters over the last year or so with retirement and injury. To free agency, take your pick. So I think there are a lot of teams coming up this year that are vulnerable defensively that Eli Manning might be able to take advantage of as well.
All right. I know we're working on getting Omar Kelly on the line, but let's look at some of the tweets that are coming in. Hashtag Giants chat.
And we can take one call, too, before we get Omar, if you want.
Okay.
We got one call.
Okay. Did you guys see Cruz lately? He doesn't run. He flies. Check this out. And of course, it was an Instagram. Yes. Listen. Everything that we're hearing about Cruz is he's been running ghost routes, and his ghost route running has been exceptional. That's really not going to be the concern, at least not for me. I mean, don't you feel that I'm really interested to see once they put in the pads and that contact right off the line of scrimmage, is Cruz able to really create that separation that he was so great at?
I think he's going to be able to. I really do. Everything that I've heard and seen and talked to people about, he is cutting as well as anybody on this team right now. So until he shows me otherwise, and, you never know if there's going to be a setback. You just don't know with injuries and knees and tendons. I get all that. But based on what I've seen, I have a lot of confidence that Victor is going to be very similar to the player he was when he got hurt before long. Now, maybe not first game of the season he's going to be the same guy, but I think he will get there.
This is from Giants Nation. What were Eli's stats when we had Jacobs, Ward, and Bradshaw? I would compare it relatively to those seasons.
Well, I don't think we're going to run as heavily as the Giants did in 2008. That was a very, very heavily skewed running team. So if you go back to that 2008 team, Eli, 3,200 yards, 21 touchdowns, 10 picks. But again, he only threw 479 passes that year. Last year, he threw 601. So I think there's going to be a lot more pass attempts this year than just 479.
All right, let's go to Minnesota. Abdul's calling in. Abdul wants to chime in on our Eli Manning talk for today. Welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hi, it's my weekly rant against Reese, I guess. It just seems like Reese always gets his own way. Why does he work at such a glacial pace? I'm talking about extending Eli's contract. Everyone knows he's going to do it, right? And this year, it would have made sense to do it earlier to give him more money, to give him more options. And right now,
how do you know he didn't try to get it done earlier?
What's that?
How do you know he didn't try to get it done earlier?
Because it would have happened.
That's not true. What if Eli Manning wanted more money than the Giants were willing to give?
Maybe you're right, and this would be my own bias against Reese. But it's based on a track record of Reese dragging his feet and always getting in his own way.
Well, Abdul, let me ask you one thing. How did it work out with Jerry Reese dragging his feet on Hakeem Nicks?
How'd
that work out?
That's one example.
But that's why you're patient And you don't do things too early because the NFL is unpredictable and you don't know how a player is going to react year to year. Now, does anybody expect Eli to fall off the cliff in his performance? A decline? Certainly not. But, Abdul, I just don't think at this point, you know, there's a reason to worry that that hasn't been done yet. I don't think there's...
I'm not worried about because that hasn't been done yet. It just seems like if he had more money, if he did it earlier, he would have had more money to work with free agents, to work with getting more players in here, to get another tackle in here, get another cornerback in here. Now we're about to start training camp, right? Hopefully we'll sign him by training camp. But at that point, we have, you know, our roster's still not done yet. Why wait until the last second to get all these options or to get more options and to get more money? Do it earlier. You know, like why did Pittsburgh get Roethlisberger done 4 months ago?
Well,
Abdul, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it.
Abdul, but the bottom line is that I'm sure he would have liked to get it done earlier, but it just didn't happen.
And also, that's what
negotiations are.
And also, another thing, you know, like a lot of times stuff is going on behind closed doors that is not even being reported.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, John. I mean, we don't know. Maybe the Giants did send out, you know, a contract offer. And it's just, maybe it's just...
Nobody knows.
Both parties want to take their time. Yeah. I mean, we...
All I've heard, and Eli's been asked to talk about it, is like, we haven't talked about it yet. No one's approached me yet. Nothing's happened yet. Where, you know, then people are saying, let's... You know, they're thinking about not even signing him yet. You know, giving him until next year, letting him play on a 1 year contract.
I've
never heard that they've been talking. I've heard is that no one's been talking about anything yet.
Abdul, but those are just reports. And thanks for the call. We have to get to Omar from Omar Kelly from the Sun Sentinel on. Thanks for calling in. But again, you're just going on reports. There are plenty of things that happen in this building and go on between players and general managers and agents, as Anita just said.
That is not reported.
That does not get reported. Absolutely right. And to think that Jerry Reese purposely sat in his office and said, you know what? It's February. Free agency's coming. Guess what, Eli? You're going to call me to try to get your contract done. I'm not going to pick up the phone. And I'm not going to talk to you about your contract until July or August. I can promise you. That did not happen.
All right. So, again, for the past few weeks, what we're doing is we're previewing all the Giants' opponents heading into 2015. And this one is going to be a fun Monday night game. I know a lot of Giants fans out there have already booked their tickets. I'm actually thinking about heading down myself. It's a Monday night at Miami, 8:30 p.m. on December 14th. And, wow, man, December 14th, what a great time to get out of New York and head down to sunny South Florida. Let's bring a good friend of mine, Omar Kelly, works for the Sun Sentinel, has his finger on the pulse of the Dolphins better than anyone else. Omar, I know you're on vacation like many people who cover NFL teams, and we do appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. I need anything for you.
All right. Well, I mean, let's kick it off. And you know, I always like to talk about the quarterbacks. You know me. Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
I went on the record by saying this is the year that he's going to either make it or break it for me. Jury's still out for me. And I know there's a lot of mixed reviews down in South Florida. But, you know, tell me, what could possibly be different this season? All the intangibles that possibly Ryan Tannehill can really become a household name and move up there as another tier in the quarterback position?
I really think it comes down to his comfort level with the weaponry, and he's got a completely new array of weapons, with the exception of Jarvis Landry and Rishard Matthews. I think he knows the spread offense. This is going to be his second year playing in Bill Lazor's spread offense, and really he's more comfortable now. Now, one of the major claims that people had on the team last year was that he was playing and stat padding, completion percentage, you know, only 12 interceptions. You know, the main knock that a lot of his receivers had was that he was throwing too conservative, where instead of swinging for a double or swinging for the fence, he was swinging for the single just to get hit. And, you know, that was a legitimate complaint if you look at his yards per attempt. But he did that in their mind to try to get his big contract. And right now he's sitting on a $95 million contract. Now, of course, not all of that is real money, but it basically guarantees him 2 years of an opportunity to prove that he is a clear-cut starting quarterback and a quarterback who's going to transcend and move into, let's say, the top one-third of the quarterbacks in this league. Now, the question is he comfortable? He's got the money. he's got the new weaponry that supposedly likes him better and works better with the way he throws the ball or his style of offense. The question is, will that offensive line protect him? And the truth be told, Ryan Tannehill has been the most sacked quarterback in the NFL for all three seasons he's been a starter,
wow,
collectively. So I believe that the offensive line still needs a little bit of work.
All right, we're joined by Omar Kelly, Sun Sentinel. Omar, question for me, and this goes back to something you brought up with Tannehill, how he was very conservative last year, and maybe some of his teammates weren't a big fan of that. And I admittedly have not watched a ton of Dolphins football the last few years, having covering the Giants, you know, every week. Don't have much chance to see the AFC East a whole lot. The criticism I've heard about Tannehill is that he, quote-unquote, can't throw the deep ball. Do you buy into that? Is he incapable of doing it? Does he choose not to throw it down the field? Is it arm strength, accuracy? Take me through how that whole storyline and idea developed and whether or not you buy into it.
Oh, I absolutely buy into it. He can't throw the deep ball. This has been an issue that's been here for 3 years now, and it's not just an issue in games. He can't throw it in practice either.
Wow.
You know, I've really learned this just watching quarterbacks over the years, and Anita can attest to this. To throw an effective deep ball, it's not just arm strength, it's not just distance, but you got to put air under it. You got to put air to be able to make it a catchable ball. And that's the one thing I don't think every quarterback can throw. Put a pass with some air on it, a 40-yard leading pass down the sideline of the field. Now, sometimes he could put air on it, but it'll go outside, it'll go inside, it won't be accurate. This is just something that, you know, I personally don't believe that every quarterback needs to have to throw a deep ball. Chad Pennington didn't have a deep ball. I mean, he could throw a deep ball, but he didn't throw it well. That wasn't part of his game. There are other things that you can do, other ways that you can produce big plays without having a deep ball. What made Tannehill's situation look worse is that there'd be 4 to 5 plays per game where Mike Wallace is running downfield, has got 3 to 4 yards on a defender, and the ball is either thrown poorly or he just wouldn't throw it at all just because he became gun-shy. So it is certainly, without a doubt, a legitimate claim and knock on him.
All right, let's talk about some of the rookies that have been brought in. And you know, I think it's interesting. Last year was the year of the wide receiver class. I mean, they were just exceptional. And there are some really fantastic wide receivers that have come out this year. The Dolphins end up with Devontae Parker from LSU, who I feel at the end of the day, barring, of course, his foot issue and that's healthy, I honestly feel that Parker could put up better numbers than Cooper and White, and you know you know how I'm big. You know how I'm big with fantasy football. This is a guy that if healthy, I would take him over those two other wide receivers, rookies, of course. I'm expecting a really big year for him. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm right. How do you feel about the young guy?
I completely think that you're wrong, Anita. Just from this standpoint, I think he's a good receiver, but talking to players on that team, I learned that he's got a lot to learn when it comes to route running and setting up his routes. He's pretty much a one-trick pony when it comes to a slant. Now, he's a good receiver who has potential and upside to be one of the league's premier receivers, but I think it's going to take a little bit of time. And that foot injury, I mean, he's still in a boot right now. When training camp opens next week, he's still going to be in a boot. So it's going to be a little bit of time. And when you've been in a boot for over a month now, that impacts your conditioning. So I don't think he's going to be ready to play a regular season game probably until a month into the season. So if I'm you, Anita, and
you're saying stay away
on that Devontae Parker.
Slow your roll a little bit.
You're saying stay away. Wow, good thing.
I'm saying stay away. Not just that, but Jarvis Landry is going to be their leading receiver. He's the slot guy. They're going to try to move him around. Then they've got Kenny Stills that they traded from New Orleans. He's just sort of the ace that's supposed to space the field. And then Greg Jennings. Don't sleep on Greg Jennings. I believe he scored 56 touchdowns in his NFL career. This is a very smooth and accomplished wide receiver. And I saw in OTAs that he was starting to begin to develop some chemistry with Ryan Tannehill. You know, as a quarterback, it's important to trust your receivers to know where they're going to be and that they're making the right reads. And that's what I saw from Greg Jennings in training camp. And I think Ryan Tannehill is probably going to lean on him a little bit.
So, John, are you watching Ballers? Have you watched Ballers
yet? You know what? I have it on the DVR. I've not watched it yet. I've heard it's very entertaining.
So, So, Omar, in Ballers, the wide receiver that went to the Miami Dolphins, like the veteran wide receiver, that's Greg Jennings. Every time I see his, I'm assuming you've watched it, right?
Yes, I have watched.
Right? Aren't you like?
Personality doesn't come off Denzel Washington's son.
No, not his personality. But I'm just saying, like, veteran wide receiver goes to Miami, last shot, last opportunity. It's shot at the facility. He wants his number. I mean, I just feel like it's the story of Greg Jennings joining the Miami Dolphins.
Well, probably. I think the personality is a little bit. Greg Jennings doesn't have a flashy personality like that receiver. But I could definitely see where you're coming from. I mean, he's trying to prove that he's still a good NFL receiver and he's still a good player. And I got to tell you, maybe injuries or durability slows him down. But in my mind, he was the best receiver that they had in camp, with the exception of Jarvis Landry.
Wow. All right, and you mentioned, Ryan Tannehill, the problems with the offensive line. And I think the offensive line issues, Omar, have also contributed to the inability of the team. They really have a consistent running game the last couple of years. Lamar Miller, though, 5 yards a carry last year. He kind of had a little bit of a breakout year. Is he going to be the bell cow this year? How many times can they run in the game? How much can his body take, given his size? And how do you see this running game breaking down this year for the Dolphins?
You know, what's interesting about Lamar Miller is that he had probably one of the most productive rushing seasons in Dolphins history, and nobody cares. and he did it with 13.5 carries per game. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's not a very durable back at the end of games. I mean, if he had 20 touches, he was gassed. And you could see that he's fought injuries his entire career. So I think you're probably going to see him maybe have 15 carries per game, maybe repeat as a 1,000-yard back. But they are really a split backfield kind of team. Damian Williams is going to get a lot of opportunities, a lot of carries, especially if he continues to serve as a third down back. And then they drafted a young guy in Jay Ajayi from Boise State who's going to be contending for playing time. I wasn't really impressed with what I saw from him in OTAs, but maybe when they put the pads on, my opinion will change, as it did with Knowshon Moreno, who, last year Knowshon just looked heavy and fat and ineffective, and all of a sudden pads came on and he was the best back on team. So, you never know, especially in this stage when pads aren't on, but Lamar Miller is expected to continue to be that bell cow.
All right, Omar Kelly joining us. I highly recommend you follow him on Twitter throughout the NFL season, beyond the Dolphins. Always great insight across the board when it comes to NFL. Let's pay attention now to the defense and the defensive line. I mean, Sue comes in. Cameron Wake has to be one of my favorite football players, period. I love watching this guy play. Can't even believe that he was once on a Giants practice squad. That just blows me away, and not just once. But those two on the defensive line, I think it's really, really going to be sick. How good is this defense going to be?
You know what? I think they will be good, just because there are a lot of players that are very good. Brent Grimes, Cameron Wake, Olivier Vernon, Rashad Jones. Those are all Pro Bowl caliber players. And then you got young players like Jelani Jenkins and Chris McCain and Jamar Taylor, who haven't really had an opportunity to transcend into the dominant NFL players. But they have the talent. They have the capabilities. The one thing that sort of fell apart last year was Miami's ability to stop the run. It seemed like, their backs broke as a defense at late in the season, and that's why Dominican Sue was such a priority signing for the Dolphins. The one thing you know about Sue is that he's a dominant force that can't be singled. And when you give him doubles, that means somebody's going to be free, either Cameron Wake or Olivier Vernon. And you beat those one-on-ones and you get a free lane to the quarterback, and that should help everybody on the team, including the linebackers, including the secondary.
We're joined by Omar Kelly. And Omar, looking at the defense last year, just taking a look at it, it looked like the defense for a period in the middle of the year played pretty good football. But then once they got to late November, they started blowing up a little bit. They gave up 39 points to Denver. They gave up 28 to Baltimore, 41 to the Patriots, 35 to Minnesota. They even gave up 37 points to the Jets in the last week of the season. What happened with this defense towards the end of this year last year that made it fall apart the way it did?
Injuries really took a toll on that team. You had Cole Amisi, the starting inside linebacker, playing with a severely sprained ankle, all season, coming back and forth. You know, they lost Louis Dumas in the Baltimore game, and Louis Dumas was really the glue that held that whole defense together. Cortland Finnegan was battling an ankle injury, and then his replacement, Jamar Taylor, he tears his shoulder. Will Davis, another replacement, he tears an ACL.
Wow.
To the point where you're going to have to put, you know, guys that you signed a week before out on the field as your starting cornerback. You can't win like that in the NFL.
Sounds like
that's what happened at the end of the season, outside of their inability to stop the run, and that had nothing to do with injuries. They really just start to fall apart from an injury standpoint, and that's why you saw the late season demise of that defense. Going into the Detroit game around midseason in November, those two defenses were ranked. It was a showdown of two of the top five defenses in the NFL. And then after that, the season just really tanked.
Do you expect then, based on some of the personnel changes, additions, and the improved health for that defense to be more like the one we saw in the first half of last season to last the entire year, given they stay healthy? Do you expect a big bounce back?
Absolutely. Ndamukong Suh alone is, you know, probably a Hall of Fame player in his prime. I mean, anytime you add a Hall of Fame player in his prime, you should have a very dominant defense, at least a top 10 defense. The one concern I do have is Wake's age. Wake turns 34 this year. And, you know, late in the season, Wake was struggling against stopping the run himself. And, you know, the question is, can they set the edge? Can they contain the run and force teams to pass? And that's something that we won't see until the pads come on. But you got to like the unit that you're looking at right now, just with everybody healthy. The question is, will they continue to get better, and will they progress, and will they stay healthy? I think that sort of dictates whether or not these Dolphins will be a playoff team or not.
Omar, I know we want to get you back to your vacation. Just two quick things for me, and that is, number one, you have Spencer Paysinger now part of the Miami Dolphins squad, one of my favorite Giants. You're really going to enjoy covering him. He's just such a class act. So please let him know that we're friends. And he will be one of your best friends in the locker room.
He's a good guy. Excellent guy.
Yeah.
Now that you vouch for him, I'll pay him a little bit more attention. It's kind of been rough for him during training camp, just because they've got a young player, Chris McCain, that they really want to invest in. And Chris is a super talented player that they got as an undrafted rookie last year. And, you know, Spencer hasn't gotten many opportunities, hasn't gotten any run. There's a lot of talk about him being a special teams player. I could tell you I really haven't seen anything on the field, but, you know, it's early right now, but I will definitely look out for him.
Yeah, Omar, you'll really, really like him.
But final question for me, you kind of hear Jet fans up here whispering a little bit, like, maybe this is the year the Patriots finally fall off. They lost. Their defense isn't the same. But here's my thing. As long as the guy wearing the whistle is Belichick and the guy taking snaps is Brady, it's hard to really write them off. What's the attitude from Dolphin fans? Are there expectations that maybe this is the year somebody finally knocks the Patriots off of that number one spot in the AFC East?
Oh, my God. Anybody who thinks the Patriots are in a demise, going to fall off are crazy, insane.
I agree with you.
When you have a first-ballot Hall of Fame coach and a first-ballot Hall of Fame quarterback, you ultimately have the best team in football for a decade, and that's what the Patriots are. While I do agree that their offensive line has probably turned down the volume a little bit, they probably need a little bit of help there, and certainly their secondary is a mystery, considering nobody deserves to be a starting quarterback in that unit. Somehow, some way, the Patriots always seem to find a way. As long as they can stay healthy, as long as they can keep Tom Brady upright, as long as Rob Gronkowski is not banged up or battling knee or back issues or elbow issues, I think the Patriots are a 11-win team, probably 10 at the least. Somehow, some way, they'll find their way in the playoffs. And I have a hard time saying that any team will beat the Patriots in New England, which is why you can only hope, if you're in the division, to split that series. So you have to basically, you know, the Dolphins have split the series with them the last 2 years, but they cannot beat them up there in Foxborough. So in order to beat the Patriots at their own game, you basically have to dominate the rest of the division and split the series with them and hope somehow, some way, the Patriots have slipped up and fallen at some point. But come on, man. We've seen this for a decade, and I'm one of those people who don't believe that Tom Brady's going to be suspended for four games. So
I agree.
Maybe two, at the max three, but no matter what, he's going to be playing the Dolphins when they play on the schedule. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. You got to beat the king to be the king, and I don't see that happening.
Omar, thank you so much. It's great.
Stuff.
It's great to hear your voice, and again, we so
appreciate it.
We
Same
so appreciate you.
You
joining us on your vacation. You enjoy the season, okay?
All right, you too, Anita.
Okay,
thanks
so much. And thank you for the Devontae Parker little nugget. I am expecting big things from this guy. Really like the way he played. I think it's going to take a minute for Amari Cooper in Oakland with Derek Carr. I think they're going to be great, but I think it's going to take them a hot second. White in Chicago, I really thought that Parker would be the wide receiver out of the three that would put up the best numbers, but man, he talked me out of it quickly, didn't he?
I'm doing my first fantasy football dynasty league. I already had the rookie draft.
Yeah, you had the rookie draft.
I had the full draft. This is the first year of the league.
So why are you drafting now?
I didn't run the league.
You don't draft now? Who's your commissioner? Jeez.
We already had the draft. So before the show's over, I want to show you my team, Sarah.
Okay.
But we actually have somebody online from Alaska. I want to try to get to him.
All right, let's do it.
Russell, what's up, pal?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you?
I'm in Alaska now.
Russell, it's all daylight there right now, right?
All daylight.
No evening. Evening does not come for you.
Yeah.
Man, how do you? Is it like? I'm just curious. Like, it's hard to sleep, right? Like, I get it. You could like you close the blinds. I'm sure you got these big curtains, but like, isn't it?
I don't sleep well, but I sleep because I be studying a lot. I be studying by computer, so I just try my best to sleep. So it all depends.
Hey, listen. This golfer would not complain. I'll make a 3 a.m. tee time. I would not complain about it.
Now, Russell,
this is not like New York. It's hunting and fishing. You ain't hunting and fishing, you are in the house.
Are you in Anchorage, Russell? Where are you in Alaska?
I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Fairbanks.
It's land of the lost.
Look out for the polar bears, man.
He's the one Giants fan.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you got for us?
There's two Giants fans out here. And me and another guy he had on Giants jersey. We took pictures together. He was like, yeah, Giants.
Oh, that's funny.
I want to talk about this offensive line. I listened to what Charlie said yesterday, and he made me negative, but I agree with him. We got to do something about this line, man. We cannot go with this. I'm afraid of this line. I'm afraid of Jerry. He's not a starter. We got to get another old lineman. When BD went down, I was like, oh man, we got to get another old lineman. We got to do something. Jake Long, I thought we were going to get Keith Booth back. I swore I thought we were going to get him back, but the move hasn't happened yet. But you got to do something about this O-line because you know how training camp comes and you know the Giants' history. Injuries happen. No one's going to get hurt. It's going to happen. We need insurance. We need another O-lineman just in case something happens.
Well, Russell, the beauty of training camp is that during the cut periods, whether it's the first cut down or the second cut down, you will have guys set loose that could help you down the road. And I'm sure, as they are with every position and every player on the team, the Giants pro personnel department and Jerry Reese in the front office keep an eye on everybody that becomes a free agent, is let go. If they see somebody out there that they think is better than somebody they have on the roster, they'll bring them in.
Yeah, I'm crossing my fingers. Hope that happens.
And I remember you mentioned Jake Long. Tom Coughlin said at a press conference that he was in for a visit. So obviously the Giants are kicking the tires on people that are out there. So if someone becomes available or is healthy enough to contribute that they want to bring in, they'll certainly do it.
Yeah, hopefully that happens. Because that's all they're missing is like one more offensive line to hold it down. I don't want Eli to get hurt, knocked out for the rest. Even though he's a durable quarterback, knock on wood, we don't want to jinx that. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to jinx that right now. He's getting older, so he doesn't need to be getting rushed all the time and pressure from the O-lineman and O-lineman going out. And then you got Swartz. We cannot count on Swartz. He can get hurt again. He got hurt last year. Don't count on him because he might get hurt again. Then we're screwed. But that's what I had to say.
All right. Appreciate it, Russell. Thank you.
All right.
I mean, look, I'm not... Here's the thing about the offensive line. I don't. And me and Lance talked about this yesterday, and this was my point. The way it's configured right now, I'd say there's a 50-50 shot. This is what it's going to look like opening day. Obviously, you have injuries. That can change things. The versatile nature of a lot of the people on the offensive line, whether it's Schwartz and Pugh, like you mentioned, they can move guys around and switch things around to get the best group out there. Brandon Mosley, another guy who could play guard and tackle that's on the bench. So they can figure that out. This is the point that I made. I would like to see whatever group that they plan on having play in week one. I want to see that group in place together, lining up left to right exactly where they're going to be on opening day of practice, on the first practice after the first preseason game against Cincinnati. That'll give them almost a full calendar month to be together, get some chemistry, and grow as a unit for the first time in the regular season. If you want to play around for the first couple of weeks and in the first preseason game to figure out what your best unit is, that's fine. I'm okay with that. But I want you to figure out who that final unit's going to be by August 15th or 16th after that first preseason game so you can get that group on the field, let them learn what it's like to play with one another. Like you said, you get chemistry, you play better as a unit, so the full sum is better than the parts.
I'm with you. I'm with you. And as I said, the full roster might not be in-house right now. I mean, they're still a few weeks away, and Jake Long came in for a workout. From what I understand, it went pretty well. It's just, you know what, the knee's not ready to go. And it's not just like, I'm the Giants organization. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were other teams that brought him in for a workout and had their medical staff look. And
he's a former Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Exactly. And maybe the knee is just not ready to go.
He's had multiple knee surgeries over the course of his career.
Right. So you just don't know. And I'm with you. I don't think this offensive line is as bad as what most Giants think. And another thing, keep in mind, and I hear this a lot with the offensive linemen that are here, and that is the way that this offense kind of moves, that Eli Manning does not have the ball longer than 3 seconds the majority of the time.
No, three or four seconds, that's it.
This is a much different offense than the one that he played in with Kevin Gilbride.
I mean, you go back, how many injured offensive linemen did Aaron Rodgers have for a couple years there in like 2011, 2012, 2013 for the Packers? He had a lot of banged up players on those offensive lines, but they figured out a way. Because of the way the offense is designed, you can work around some of those weaknesses. I would be less concerned about the offensive line when it comes to the quarterbacking and the protection of Eli than I would creating space in the running game. I think that's where we need to see the biggest improvement this year with the offensive line. It's creating space for the running backs. Last year, the pass protection spare a game or two really was fine. The passing game operated just fine last year.
Phone lines are open, by the way, 201-939-4513. If you want to get in, now's the time to do it. Our show question today is based on what this team is going into this season, all the talent that is now around Eli Manning. Do you feel that Eli Manning will have the best year of his professional career? That's what we want to find out. 201-939-4513. Also, just to make a note in regard to the whole JPP situation, did you hear what Justin Tuck said? Justin Tuck, I want to say he played in Zach Diassi's golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came out and said that he thinks that that JPP is going to have a great year this coming year. That
we'll
he's
see.
Spoken to him and that he thinks he's going to have a great year.
Hey, look, and I said this on the show yesterday. Now that we're past the July 15th deadline, Anita, this whole thing becomes very simple. If JPP is going to play for the Giants, it's going to be on the franchise tag. And it's up to him whenever he wants to come in and sign the deal.
Right.
So the Giants can't do anything. They can't make any offers. They can't move anything around. When JPP's ready, he'll show up, he'll sign his contract, and he'll play. Until then, everyone's just waiting. There's really not much anybody else can do.
I understand that.
I know.
I'm not understand that. I'm not. I don't want to dive into that aspect. I think it's promising to hear that kind of positive take from former defensive linemen like Tuck, and also OC was pretty positive about it. That he's going to have to change some things, maybe his stance, what have you. But hopefully it all works out in that regard.
Hey, look, it'll be an adjustment, but I'm sure he'll figure it out. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take, and that's really the question that, frankly, nobody really has the answer to yet, and we'll have to wait and see when he decides to come to camp and become a member of the team again. We'll have to wait and see.
All right. Do you want to
be... You want me to lay it on you here?
Yeah.
All right. We got it's a 12-team league. All right.
And this is this your first... Let me ask you this. Is this your first
This is my first dynasty league. I've done keeper leagues where you keep only two players. This league you get to keep, I believe you're keeping eight, if I recall properly.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
So here is
Brace yourself, people.
I'm doing it with my brother. We did it as a group because we're both in a couple leagues and we felt like it was a little rough to get in another league and figure that out. And I'm still trying to figure out how this thing actually works here in terms of, here we go. So my two quarterbacks, I got Cam Newton and Teddy Bridgewater.
Oh, I love Teddy Bridgewater.
Was very happy I got him.
Do you remember what round you
I got Bridgewater middle of the draft. It was pretty late.
That's fantastic.
I was very happy about
love
that.
Love it, love
the only
it.
Problem, they have the same bye week, so I'm going to have to find a third quarterback for week five, but that's okay. I'll figure it out.
But for a dynasty league, moving forward, a keeper league, I like it.
Our running backs, here we go. I did not spend – actually, I spent a couple early picks on running backs, but not on established guys. I picked Melvin Gordon.
Okay.
I picked Carlos Hyde.
Okay.
I picked Lamar Miller.
Okay.
And then a couple of sleeper guys. I picked Darren McFadden as the Cowboys running back because who knows who's going to play. He was a late round pick. David Johnson, the rookie running back for the Cardinals.
Uh-huh.
I picked. Tavares Cadet, who's now with the Patriots. A lot of people think he might take that Shane Vereen role that was with the Patriots last year. So he's my other running back. And that's my group there. My wide receiver I invested pretty heavily in. I'm pretty happy with my group.
So, but before we move forward,
yes.
What your running back core says to me is, again, since this is a dynasty league, you're not looking necessarily to win right now, where I think you did a great job with the quarterback position because I think Cam right now is going to put up some great numbers for you this season.
I do not have that monster running back for this year.
Exactly.
I do not.
But
that is correct.
Yeah, but you're investing in Teddy B. You're playing this year with Cam. Running back wise, it seems like it's a ton of investment and then some low tier running backs.
I think that's a very fair analysis.
Okay.
Wide receiver. All right. I got AJ Green. I had the last pick in the first round. So AJ Green was my late round, first round pick. The other big guys were off the board, unfortunately. Julio Jones got picked the pick before me, who I wanted. But I got AJ Green as my number one wide receiver.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
And Giants are going to be in Cincinnati for a few days. You'll have an opportunity to kind of like hang out with your star wide receiver.
That is true.
Yeah.
Let
him know he's on your team. Like maybe give him more added inspiration, motivation to put up some good numbers for you.
I'm sure that's what he needs. He needs to talk to me and
exactly.
then he'll have a great
exactly.
year.
Exactly. I like it.
And then I did some investment into the future. I picked Nelson Aguilar. Okay. Eagles first-round pick, who I was very happy with.
I think that's solid.
I picked your guy, Devontae Parker.
Uh-oh. You're probably not feeling really good about it now that we had a conversation with Omar Kelly.
Not counting on for this year, though.
What a big bust he's going to be.
That is a future investment pick. I expect him to ride the bench most of the year and with his foot.
Well, Omar did say, Anita, maybe down the road.
Right.
But this year, steer clear.
My brother was a big fan of this guy. Me, not so much, but he thinks Michael Floyd's going to have a big year for Arizona if Carson Palmer's healthy.
I'm sorry. You know what?
To me, he's been in the league 3 years. I think the upside is gone.
I know,
my opinion.
I know this is a family show, so I'm going to keep it clean. but do me wrong once, shame on you. Do me wrong twice, shame on me.
I'm in that
Michael
group.
Floyd did me wrong last year. In such a big way.
Now, quarterback situation, though. Was it his fault, though?
No. Carson didn't get injured till later on. Even with Carson in there, he was not what he needed to be. So I am steering clear from Floyd. And you know what? Maybe because I'm steering clear from him, maybe this is the year for him.
Maybe. Then a couple other guys I invested in. Cody Latimer for the Broncos.
I like it.
I rolled the dice on Cordarrelle Patterson in like the next to last round of the draft. It was like the next to last round pick. I figured, what the heck?
Let me tell you something. That young man has so much talent.
Yep.
Like scouts and offensive coordinators and wide receiving coaches came out of the combine comparing him to the next Randy Moss. The difficulty is, for whatever reason, listen, you know, we all have our hangups. He just doesn't get the playbook. You know, he's street smart. He's not book savvy. And so once that comes together,
good way to put it,
especially in Marv's system, I'm sorry, Norv Turner's system, he really could blow up and be something huge. So that's an investment pick. And you know what? I like it. I like it because you have Teddy B.
And then Marvin Jones was my last pick. Come back off injury for the Bengals. Who knows what he'll do.
Okay.
Now, I love my tight end situation.
Uh-oh.
I have Jason Witten to start for me this year. solid contributor.
Yeah.
Then I got both
He's kind of long in the tooth.
I got both Eric Ebron and Austin Seferian Jenkins as my two other tight ends.
Yeah, let me tell you something. This has to be the year for Ebron because he went out, the Detroit Lions invested a first-round pick in him, and he just did not deliver last year. I mean, even to the point where there were weeks that he wasn't even starting.
Yep.
So this has to be the year for him. So I kind of like it, and it will be interesting to see what happens at the tight end position for the Tampa Bay Bucks. As we know, a young rookie quarterback, his best friend is
tight end.
The tight end. It's a security blanket. So maybe while Jameis Winston is making those reads, you know, he's looking at Mike Evans, no, he's looking at Vincent Jackson, no, and then he dumps off to his tight end. I think that's a solid pick.
So that's where
I am.
And
then look, you got the Miami Dolphins. Is that your Miami Dolphins and the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yes, those are my two defenses, and Randy Bullock is my kicker.
I like it, but no Giants.
I tried. I was.
Is this the majority of the people in this league in New York? See, that's
they're all New Jersey guys. So I mean, honestly, I knew it was never going to happen. If Odell Beckham was there at the 12th pick, I was going to pick him, but he was gone at like 6, so I had no chance of getting him. And then I was going to pick Cruz late. He went like 2 picks before me.
Yeah, you know what? That's the really tough thing.
All the Giants players go early.
And you know this, I play in 12 leagues a year, and some of the leagues I've been in forever, and they're national leagues. Some leagues I play in Miami because I was born and raised there, and then some leagues I play in Baltimore because I spent 4 years there, and then some leagues I play here in New York. And it's really interesting in regard to like how, where, you know, geographically you're drafting.
Absolutely.
How the draft is so different, and how like wide receiver Jarvis Landry in Miami, that Jarvis Landry is going to go at least maybe 3 rounds higher than he should, just because you've got Miami Dolphin fans who are going to want him on the roster. I wouldn't be surprised. Did Odell Beckham Jr. go in the first round?
Oh yeah, he went like top.
See, but this
it's
is
also
a dynasty
league.
Yeah,
so
that's but don't be surprised for folks out there that are playing fantasy football this year, and you're just playing in a normal 1 year snake draft, what have you. Do not be surprised if Odell Beckham goes in the first round.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know, here in New York, everybody's going to want him. So, you know, in Baltimore, Joe Flacco goes, you know, top 12 as in quarterbacks taken.
Oh, okay. Quarterbacks taken.
You know what I mean?
He'll even go top 10 quarterback.
You know? Yeah.
I don't like that.
He will.
No, you're right, though.
You know, if you really want to win your fantasy football league, I'm sorry.
You got to leave your heart, you got to leave that fan
at the door and draft with your head. So, you know, it's going to be a fun season.
There are a lot of Giants, though. In the past, not a lot of Giants have been big-time fantasy football guys. Vereen in PPR leagues is going to be a big pick this
absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
Eli, I think is going to be I think he could be in a 12-team league, a good starter this year based on the numbers he's going to put up. We know about Beckham. Cruz could be a nice mid-round sleeper in some leagues if you don't have a lot of Giant fans in there. And then Larry Donnell last year was a huge guy at tight end for the first half of the year. He put up a lot of touchdowns.
We did get a tweet, by the way, because we were talking about – I had made a comment about the tight end position.
Yeah, what do you got?
Who's the name, Matt Lacoste.
Yes.
Lacoste. Mm-hmm. That is the guy that I do believe is going to come in and maybe challenge Donnell.
Oh, Paul Dottino's got inside your head, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what happens when you host with Paul Dottino. But I had made a comment that I think, and I do believe that a number of the tight ends that are on this roster are going to step up their game. You know, when you look around the league, you know, there's certain tight ends that it's their job, period. You know, I mean, like Gronk, like Travis Kelce, like Antonio Gates, but obviously not for the first 4 weeks. You know what I mean? Like, you look around the league, and there's certain tight ends that's their job. And then you look around the league, and you know, the tight end position, I think there's some competition there. And I do believe it's Larry's job to lose, but I do believe that there's going to be competition at this position, and I can't wait to see what everything we've seen from Matt in OTAs and in the minicamp. And granted, yes, I know it's just a small sample size, and they haven't really put on the big boy pads yet, and they haven't hit and da 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 da. But I'm interested to see if he's really going to step up and challenge Larry, or if, you know, Robinson's going to step up, or maybe Fell steps up even more so this year.
So one other undrafted free agent to a tight end that a lot of people have talked about, but I think he's actually looked pretty good in practice too, and that's Will Tye, the kid out of Stony Brook. I think he's flashed a little bit. I mean, he seems to have developed a bit of a chemistry with Ricky Stanzi at quarterback. I think that's another guy that's actually shown pretty darn good hands. So I agree. I think tight end's going to be a very interesting position to watch during camp. I think there'll be some legit competition for the starting spot, for playing time and things like that. I think, though, it'll be a very, very fun position to watch moving forward to see who can win that spot, earn playing time. You know, Ben McAdoo likes to use two tight ends. There's going to be plenty of opportunities. I think it's going to be a fun spot to watch.
What's the one position battle that you're most excited about?
That's a good question.
Defensive end, safety.
Nickel corner.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Or safety. Those are my two. The second safety next to Landon Collins, I'm assuming Landon Collins is going to win the starting spot.
Right.
And I think who's going to be that third and fourth cornerback? Because you know how this league works. The corners get hurt.
Right.
You need corners. Who's going to be that guy that's going to step up? Well, we got a couple more calls we got to squeeze in the last 4 minutes of the show here.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Anita Marks, John Schmelk, of course, and you, Big Blue Nation.
Yep.
You're watching Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. We'll take as many calls as we can before we sign off. Let's go to line one. David calling in from North Carolina. David, welcome. You're up.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up, David?
I was going to talk about it, and I apologize. I haven't got to hear much of today's show so far, but I know talking about yesterday, Lance and you, John, were on there talking about how you foresee the offense performing in terms of, you know, you think they'll try to get the ball out quick. With being a second year in the offense, will they try to maybe attack deep a little bit more? And don't you guys feel like that? I know there's, you hate to comment on the JPP stuff with there being so much up in the air and not knowing, but.
Well, you know, David, the thing about it now at JPP, we really know the deal. I mean, the contract, the franchise tender's there, and if he wants to play under it, he'll come in and he'll sign it. So, I mean, we could talk about JPP all you want right now. There really isn't any more questions as to what the contract's going to be because he has to sign the franchise tag or he's not going to play.
Right, but in terms of even when he signs it, what can he do, how soon? And I think what's really not been stated is how much it could have benefited Ereck Flowers to be going against that guy in training camp coming up. I think it's a huge loss that you know has been overlooked. That
it's not a bad point.
You know, besides the tenders out there. If he wants to play, it's there. But I just don't know how soon he's going to be able to do anything with some of the reports of the skin grafting and the broken thumb. If that's true, I mean, again, we don't know what to believe. But I just and to go back to the offense, I still think you know everybody's got a lot of high expectations. If Cruz is healthy, et cetera, you still got a rookie left tackle over there, guys. And it's a big, big, big question mark how he can play. And I think it would have really, really helped him to be going up against JPP all summer long. I think it's a huge loss that he's not going to get that work in and day out because, you know, say what you want about JPP. You know, is he the best pass rusher in the world? Is he inconsistent? The one thing that JPP puts up every year, if he usually plays a full year healthy, is you don't see many defensive linemen finish the year with 65, 70, 80 tackles. That's a lot of tackles for a defensive lineman.
Yep.
And so I think it would have really benefited Flowers, you know, go against that every day. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest downfalls or unfortunate circumstances of this JPP injury. And I'll listen to the rest of the show. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. You know, and that's funny. I thought I heard every angle on the JPP thing over the last month. That's an interesting one. And I do think that it would have helped Flowers to go up against a guy of that caliber every day at practice to see what life in the NFL is really going to be like. Not to say a guy like Robert Harris can't help give him that same type of experience as George Selvey, but obviously JPP is a super high-end athlete, and I think that would have helped Flowers. I think that's fair.
This is the first time that you and I have had an opportunity to kind of talk about the defensive line since the JPP incident happened. And one thing that Lance and I have talked about and Paul and I is that, you know, the fact that it happened to this type of position player, you know, I think there is a silver lining there because the Giants have so much depth.
Yeah.
And they do have so much talent. And there could be a star within this group that now has been given, will more than likely be given an opportunity to kind of step up. What are your thoughts in regard to how you think, let's say hypothetically speaking, the season starts, regular season game one, September 13th.
He's not ready.
And he's not ready. How do you see this defensive line? Do you see this as starting four, or do you see this as, per down, per position situation, third and long, third and short? You know, how do you see this defensive line panning out?
I think it's the latter. I think you hit it on the head. I think you're using a combination of guys to give you what you lost there, because I don't think you're going to pull another guy up that's going to be the type of complete two-way player JPP is. Everyone talks about the sacks, but David brought up what was a great point. He's an excellent run defender, and I think you're going to have to use a guy like George Selvey on first or second down to help make up for some of the run defense you're losing. Then on third down, maybe you go to a guy like DeMontre Moore to give that type of pass rush. So I think you're going to use a rotation of guys, Anita, to help replace that production first and second down against the run, and then getting after the quarterback later on in passing situations. I think it'll be a combination of guys.
Okay. Let's finish up with Javon calling in from the Bronx. Javon, welcome in to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hi, Anita. Hi. How you doing? I wanted to just say really briefly that I think that JPP is going to come back with a vengeance. I think he's going to have a chip on his shoulder whenever it is that he does actually come back. He's going to be outrageous, a force to be reckoned with, because he's going to have a lot to play for. I agree with the other fellow about Flowers not having an opportunity to go up against him early, but somehow I feel like it's going to work out for him. As long as Eli is standing up, at the end of the day, we have a shot. And that's all I got.
Thank you, Javon. I appreciate it. And look, and that's what Len always says. If Eli's on this team, you got a chance. And the way this offense plays, you're going to have a chance. But at some point, you're going to need the defense to do its part. And I think heading into camp, that's the really thing you got to look at, Anita. How well can this defense play? How much can they improve from last year to this year? And are we really going to know until you get into regular season games? You know how the preseason is. Everything's bland. Nobody shows all their stuff. You're not going to blitz a whole lot. In practice, you're still limited in terms of contact for the most part. You know, you're not going to do full-out tackling and things like that. So I think it's going to be a long wait and see until we get to that first regular season game with the defense, until we really know what we have in our hands.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so moving on for the rest of the week, have we gone through every opponent so far?
No, I believe Paul and I – who do we have tomorrow? You know what? I need to look that up. I'm not positive.
I know that Lance and I did the entire AFC East.
Yes. I believe we still have Carolina and Minnesota remaining. I don't think we've done a Panther. I don't think we've done a Viking yet. And that's going to be the next 2 days. And then next week it'll be pure training camp preview, all Giants talk.
Yeah.
We'll get it done.
Fantastic stuff. And then, of course, once training camp opens up, then we'll be rocking and rolling. And I mean, a ton of stuff. I cannot wait when training camp opens up, because there'll be a ton of stuff to talk
about.
Should
be fun.
So, hey, we want to thank everybody who tuned in today to Big Blue Kickoff Live, as well as Omar Kelly giving us that Miami Dolphins preview. Again, should be. I think that's one of the games that I think most Giants fans kind of circled and was like, oh, December, Miami, at Miami, Monday night.
Could you give me the game on a Sunday night so I'm in Miami for a Saturday night, though?
Could
you help me out a little bit? I'm not in Miami for Saturday night.
Well, maybe that will be the game that Tom Coughlin's like, well, maybe we can go down. No, we know it's Miami. It will never happen. But
what planet are you living on?
I know. What was I thinking? Anyway, thank you so much for myself, John Schmelk, and all of us here at the Giants organization and Giants broadcast team. We thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great day, everybody.
Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!